On episode 455 of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we discuss how to use seasonal ketosis as a part of an ancestral-based lifestyle. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/455.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
This episode of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast is sponsored by Let's Get Checked. I typically get blood labs done 3 to 4 times per year, and I've dreaded it every time. It's time-consuming, expensive, and now I have to worry about why other people might be in the same waiting room with me. Let's Get Checked has a brilliant model for getting lab work done from the comfort of your own home. You order the tests you want, and they send you the testing kits with full, easy-to-understand instructions. You get your sample send it to them with the prepaid shipping label provided. Their labs are CLIA approved and CAP accredited, which is the highest accreditation available. But what I love most about their approach is how you can order just the tests you want. Full labs can get very expensive. With Let's Get Checked, you pick and choose the labs you want, and as a result, you pay less. Cholesterol, hormones, PSA, vitamin deficiency, CRP, thyroid, they have them all, but you only pay for the tests you want. No setting a doctor's appointment, going to the doctor, finding a local testing lab, if your hometown even has one, setting another appointment, getting the sample drawn, and waiting. With Let's Get Checked, you'll have your results probably before you could even get in to see your doctor. A physician will review your results, and if there's anything going on, they have nurses that you can talk with. It's a really cool process. Let's Get Checked makes it easy for anyone to get professional testing and consultation from the comfort of their home. If you're trying to improve your health, you need measurable goals. Blood work is the best health marker you can use to know if you're on track. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/LGC and use the code ALLAN20. That's ALLAN20. And you'll get 20% off. Visit 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/LGC and be sure to use the code ALLAN20 to get your 20% discount. Raz, how you doing?
Great, Alan. How are you today?
A little frustrated. The Panamanian government reneged on giving us our Saturdays back. So, I said last time I thought I was going to get a Saturday off, and it appears that they decided that Bocas del Toro doesn't. And part of it is, at least at this point, they're thinking in terms of states or provinces as we are. And we just happen to be associated with Bocas del Toro province, which includes the mainland. And so they are having some major outbreaks on the mainland. But last we heard, there was less than 12 cases here on the island. So, it's under control here, but we, living under more stringent rules. So they didn't open our curfew and they didn't give us the Saturday back. So,
wow. So sorry to hear that. That's awful.
Well, it is what it is. It's just, this too will pass. Just means I'm going to get more miles in during my 5 days I can walk than
that's true.
Than I normally would.
That's true.
So how's your week been?
Good, good. Got a good run in this morning. Our weather's cooling off a little bit, so running was great this morning, and I've got a run club tonight, so I'll be getting a few more miles with some friends tonight, too, so that'll be fun.
Cool. Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and get into today's episode. I'm going to be talking about seasonal ketosis, and it's a term that I coined the phrase, and I've talked about a little bit in my book, and I recognize that I've mentioned it a few times on a few podcasts, and I briefly describe it, but I wanted to go into a little bit more detail because I was talking to somebody about ketosis, and they're like, oh, I could never eat like that year round. Every once in a while, I want some cake or bread or something like that. And so I said, well, you can have your cake and eat it too with some stipulations. So let's go ahead and get into that episode. Hello, and thank you for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness Podcast. I'm really glad to have you here today. Today's show is going to be a little different. I have talked about seasonal ketosis as the way that I eat a few times on this show and on some other podcasts, but I've never really broken down how it works and why it works and what it is specifically for me and how it fits within my overall ancestral-based lifestyle. Now, when I started this effort to go from a fat bastard to healthy and fit, I was introduced to paleo by a dietitian, and she brought up the paleo diet, explained what it was, what I could eat, what I couldn't eat, and I loved it. So I stepped in away from my high-carb diet and started just eating meat, fish, and vegetables. I'd never heard of the ketogenic diet or the keto diet, as it's often called, but because I was on such a low-carb version of the paleo diet, it actually put me into ketosis. So I had to figure out what ketosis was because something different was happening to me. And, you know, my breath and other things you hear about, but the weight loss was dramatic. So I enjoyed a lot of benefits out of the ketogenic diet. My blood sugar got steady. I had higher energy. I had less brain fog. And it felt great. Now, over the past 8 years, I've continued to follow the ketogenic diet for most of the year, and I call that seasonal ketosis. Now, most people that adopt the ketogenic diet, they do it full time. They start eating low carb and they stay low carb and they try to keep their body in ketosis all the time. And they see the benefits, so they would ask, why would I ever go off the keto diet if I enjoy how I feel when I'm on it? And to answer that question, for me, it's really about balance. I enjoy beer. I enjoy wine. I enjoy fruit. I enjoy yeast rolls. And occasionally I want to have a hamburger with a bun. So I picked a specific part of the year where I would allow myself to go off of ketosis. Now, I mentioned a few shows back that I had not started my famine season on time and really kind of blew it for a while. But I am back into my famine season and I've lost 25 pounds plus and still going. But That's not all this is really about. So I use seasonal ketosis as a way to stay generally healthy, to keep my health in good check, to keep my weight in a healthy body composition range. It improves my fitness, longevity, and the joy I have in my life. So I've developed an ancestral-based lifestyle, and I'm not going to get into the argument about what our ancestors would or would not have eaten. I'm not going to get into the argument of, you know, how long they lived and all that. I'll talk a little bit about that, but that science doesn't interest me. I know that there were no fruits available to my ancestors in the northern part of Europe. I know that they would not have been able to transport food all around the world, so I would not have been eating nutrients from different continents all at one time. I would not always have access to vegetables and fruits and all this other gobbledygook. I just wouldn't. There'd be periods of time when I wouldn't. So, but before I really get into seasonal ketosis, I do want to talk about a few key things just so we're all on the same base. When I'm talking about ancestral living, there's a few just core tenets that I'm going to throw out there. One is understanding what ketosis is. Now, ketosis is when your body is burning fat. So that can either be the fat that you're eating or it can be body fat. And in doing so, you create ketone bodies. Now, these ketone bodies are something that your brain and your body can use as fuel. Most of the time, people are running on glucose. Okay, there's glucose in your blood, there's glucose, you know, in the form of glycogen in your muscles and liver, and we use that for energy most of the time. At least that's how it's been for at least the last probably 60, 70 years here in the United States now. And we've also gotten a lot fatter. Ketones, on the other hand, can do all of that fueling. And in many cases, it's more efficient and it's cleaner. It doesn't cause as many problems for us. So our bodies actually perform better, operate better, and are in better health when we're in ketosis. So that's just ketosis. Now, the ketogenic diet is also called keto or the keto diet. It is a low-carb, high-fat diet that forces your body to go into nutritional ketosis. Now, you can induce ketosis with exogenous ketone bodies or MCT oil, which is a medium-chain triglyceride, but that's not what I'm after here. We want healthy food. We want a healthy diet of real food that puts us into ketosis naturally, and it's not that hard to do. You just got to get the macros right and push through. Now, with me, seasonal ketosis is a cyclical ketogenic diet. Now, instead of doing just a week, I do my cycles running over months, okay? And in fact, seasons. I'll have a season where I'll go into famine, and then I'm in a strict ketogenic diet at that point. I stay in ketosis almost the whole time. And then I'll have some feasting seasons when, I'll go ahead and allow myself to eat what I want. I don't have any no-nos. Now, I do tend to continue to eat a little bit high fat, low carb at that time, but the rules are gone. I just eat what I feel compelled to eat and enjoy the food that I have. Now, my approach to a healthy ancestral lifestyle really is about health and longevity, even though we may never actually answer that question, how long our ancestors would have lived. What we do know is that child mortality was much higher. We know that they didn't have the medical know-how of modern times, and they had less access to food. And we didn't have access to what, most of the experts would call healthy whole foods. I mean, we had what was there. That was all that was there. So I know that we didn't have, we did. That's all we had. There were no McDonald's. There was none of that stuff. And we did a lot more physical activity every day. So whatever the evidence says, if people weren't living as long, it was probably for different reasons, okay? Now, during those times, like I said, there would be periods, particularly in the North, where we would have feast and famine, when we would spend part of the year eating a ketogenic diet and even some periods of fasting. We didn't have food preservation. So we would have to wake up in the morning and maybe not have any food around. So we would have to go get it. We could be traveling and walking for hours and not find that. But what we would do is, if you think about it from a seasonal perspective, we would have access to more food in the spring through the fall. So there would be fruits, there'd be vegetables, there'd be things like that. And so we would probably put on some weight between spring and fall. It would just be a normal thing. And it was good because body fat helps protect us from the cold, keep us warmer, and it also gives us food. I mean, when we don't have food, it provides us the energy we need, okay? Now, as we go into the winter, weight loss would be the norm as we started using that fat on our bodies to keep us alive. So if we didn't have access to food, our bodies adapted to stay alive. Our bodies adapted to be able to continue to do what we needed to do. I also believe that we were opportunistic eaters. Now, we didn't have a McDonald's or a Tim Hortons or whatever it is that you have on every corner. We didn't drink sweetened beverages. We had water. We ate whole foods. When we killed an animal, we ate it hoof to nose. As hunter-gatherers, we ate well as we could, and we fasted when we had to. So we were on the land. And I think that's one of the core tenets of this is that we knew what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat. And we got that through the tribal knowledge. So, I think it's really important to understand that the things that we call food today are not food. Groceries as they are today are not as nutritious as what we had then. And we've got to fix that as a people. That's got to be a priority somewhere along the lines. This episode of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is sponsored by Vault Health. Guys, we need to discuss the elephant in the room. Most of us really struggle to manage certain health issues, especially when it affects things we don't want to talk about, like our libido and vitality. Yes, I'm talking about low T. Did you know that 40% of men over 40 suffer from low T? Low T can cause weight gain, loss of muscle mass, ED, fatigue and poor sleep, low energy, and depression. These can completely dismantle any efforts you're making to be healthy and fit. If you're dealing with one or more of these, it's worth booking a free online consultation with a Vault physician at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/vault. Vault is all about discretion. After your free consultation and you agree you want treatment, they'll send a phlebotomist to your home to do a blood draw. You'll get a personalized doctor-reviewed treatment plan. This can be with pills, cream, or injections. The medications are mailed to your home. There's nothing macho about neglecting your health. If you live in the United States and you're struggling, it's worth learning more at Vault Health. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/vault today. That's 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/vault. Now, another big tenet I want to talk about is fitness. Now, we were not sedentary. You cannot survive as a hunter-gatherer if you're going to sit and not do anything. You just don't. So we would have to be fit. We wouldn't be able to go to a gym for cardio and strength training, but we would have regular exposure to three primary movement modalities that were really, really important for us, okay? We would do low intensity steady state, or LISS, as I like to call it, where we had to migrate. So, you know, food's not always where we want it to be, and the animals were moving with migration patterns. We would have to move with them if we want to be successful hunters. So this would require sometimes days of us to walk and travel, hiking, basically. And we'd have to carry our stuff with us. So if we had shelter and coats and different clothing and blankets and all the different things we needed, tools and weapons, we would be carrying those with us. So we would go on these long, low-intensity, steady-state movements, okay? Now, occasionally, we would have high-intensity interval training. And you can think of that in terms of if we were hunting or we were fending off other tribes, it would require us to have some power and some skill. So working with weapons, moving for short periods of time quickly, resting, moving again, that would be normal, regular activity for us. So yes, more movement. And then finally is strength and mobility. When we killed a large animal or we stumbled across a berry patch, we would feast. Now, that would also require, in some cases, for us to lift parts of the animal and carry it back to camp, or we'd have to squat down to pick the berries that we were going to be eating. So again, more movement. And so you can see through this, just the lifestyle of a hunter-gatherer is filled with tons and tons of movement. Now, we also would have work-life balance. We wouldn't be putting in long commutes. We wouldn't be doing a lot of the things we do now. But while we're working to survive, we would also understand that we needed to rest, okay? So we would understand that, we would need flow. And what I mean by flow is, you know, flow is kind of fitting in with what's there. We would know that there's ways to hunt, there's ways to move, there's times that we need to go. And so we would start following a natural pattern of days, months, seasons. You watch some of the shows where they depict people and they live by the moon. The moon and the seasons give them the information they need to survive. Now, if they faced a threat, and then they had a stressor, which, you know, basically what a threat would do is the stress response, it would be acute and immediate. It'd be life or death. So they would have that cortisol hit. They'd have, you know, that adrenal hit, and then it would be gone. It wouldn't be this long, drawn out months and months and months of things that we do to ourselves now. So we would have a very low stress life in a general sense. As long as we were able to successfully hunt and move and do the things we needed to do, our stress levels were much lower. We also did risk management. And I know that sounds kind of weird talking about our ancestors, but the way you stay alive, the way longevity happens, is understanding the risks associated with your life as a primal living being, okay? We weren't worried about calories, blood sugar, vitamin C, processed meat, dietary fiber, or if we had a healthy microbiome. Those concepts weren't even in our head. But what we did was we followed a path that was set by our ancestors. Our ancestors would go and they'd say, we know we go this direction. This is the way we have to go this month at the moon. And then we would go. But we would have to also understand what we're facing. If another tribe moved in to the area, we might have to change the plan. But we would do it. We had risk management. We were paying attention. So the biggest risks to us at that time was infant mortality and tribal warfare. And the only biohacking that we would have done was just making sure that we were aware of the risks and then figuring out ways to avoid them or deal with them. And then relationship would be very important to us. We worked and moved as a tribe. And in a tribe, it works to our benefit because it helps everyone's survival. We hunted in packs, and we're hard-coded in our DNA to be socially engaged. So that relationship, that closeness is really, really important to the nature of ancestral living. And then finally, within ancestral living, I want to talk about curiosity. You know, we did tend to follow the same basic patterns, seasonal patterns, year in and year out, but we were constantly engaged with what was going on in the world around us because our survival depended on it. you know, we couldn't go in and ask Google or Facebook what the weather was going to be like, or if we were going to have an early summer or a late winter or whatever. And no, there was no groundhog to do it for us either. We looked to our elders to advise us, and then the tribe had to learn and adapt. And that's how we would survive hard times. Now, I recently started a blog to dive into these issues in more detail. But full disclosure, I'm a terrible blogger. I can brag about this being episode 455 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, but I've done several blogs over the years, and I don't think I've ever gotten more than maybe 15 blog posts in any one blog I've ever started. So they blog fade pretty quickly. I hope that doesn't happen with this blog, but what I plan to do with that blog is explore a lot of these topics that I've talked about so far. So if you're interested in any of those, you might want to check out the blog. I'll do the best I can, but what's probably going to end up happening is I'll probably end up bringing some of those topics here to the podcast. So check out the blog as I get going on it. Probably not anything else on there now, but check it out. And that's where a lot of these topics are going to be discussed in more detail. And if you have any questions, feel free to join us on the Facebook group at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group and just ask. I'm there. I'm there to participate and help you in any way I can. So if you're interested in this topic, I would like to carry on that conversation. So for today's discussion, and I know I've been going already for quite a while, but I really want to dive into seasonal ketosis and share why I do it and the reasons that it may or may not be right for you. Okay. The first question I kind of have in my mind when I'm thinking about this, is seasonal ketosis the same thing as cyclical keto diet? And technically it is. It's, you know, you're cycling in and out of keto. So it is a cyclical keto diet. However, when you talk to most people about the cyclical keto diet, it's a 6 days on, 1 day off, and they call that a refeed day. And I'm metabolically capable of doing that kind of keto diet, but I'm not a really good moderation type person. You know, I'm either all on or all off. So if I took a weekly cheat day, you know, or a carb up day, I just don't know what that day after that might be like. And I might just go ahead and have a second cheat day. So when I start my famine season, you know, in my ketogenic diet, I start dropping weight relatively quickly. And then I'll get to my set point and I'm good, you know. So I like that. I like seeing 2 to 5 pounds come off in a week. What I wouldn't be a fan of is seeing like 4 pounds down, then 2 pounds up. And I'm pretty sure that's how the cyclical keto diet would work for me. And I don't really like that. It's progress. Don't get me wrong. It's progress. But that's just not me. I'm happy knowing that I can have a few more carbs on my high activity days without going out of ketosis. So if I'm going to have more carbs, I'm just going to work out a hell of a lot harder that week to make sure that I can keep myself in ketosis and have the carbs too. So if I want some fruit, I got to earn it from a carb, blood sugar, muscle, and liver glycogen model. Now, there are some positives to the cyclical keto over full-time keto. In many cases, athletic performance can be better and muscle growth is better, you know, but I'm not a bodybuilder and I perform fine without the refeeds. I can do as much as I want to do or need to do. So again, cyclical keto is just not for me, but if you're someone who's looking for a way to do keto and then have that kind of that refeed, that break, you might want to check that out. Now, why does seasonal ketosis make sense to me from an ancestral perspective? And I've gone into some of this already. When I started this and I was learning about the paleo diet, I came across Mark Sisson's Primal Blueprint. And now Mark laid out a very reasoned case for how our ancestors lived and ate. I used a character, I think he named Grok. So whether you believe in human evolution, creationism, or intelligent design, I don't think you can argue that we're not doing things right now. We've got to change something. The standard American diet is killing us. You know, back then we didn't eat refined grains and we didn't have junk food. You know, we were hunters and gatherers. We were, like I said, opportunistic eaters, and we ate the nutrition that our body required, essential amino acids and essential fats. They came from animals, primarily red meat and fish. That's where we got our food. Most of our food was going to come in that form. And then based on the seasons, you know, we had short periods of the year where it was either cold or dry. We were in ketosis because there just might not be any vegetables or fruits available to us during periods of time. And then, of course, because food availability and everything, we would spend a good bit of time fasting or intermittent fasting or maybe some extended fasting, depending on the nature of what's going on in the world. You know, if we get a good cold, hard freeze, and all the animals are moving and there's no, no vegetation at all, we got to go with the animals. We got to catch up to them, and then we got to do the hunting. So, just recognize that, our diet would have been very keto for much of the year. Okay. Now I started doing this for weight loss. That was my core reason. And I was very much drawn to the primal paleo diet, because it made intuitive sense. You know, Mark did a really good job. I think this was maybe the first article I even read, that, you know, you can't eat what you don't have access to. You wouldn't eat processed foods at all, ever. Okay. Everything we would have eaten would have been whole food. It would have been locally and sustainably sourced. And the human body was designed to be a hunter. I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever. When you look at our features, look at what we can do, we were designed to be hunters. But when there's fruits and vegetables available, we're probably going to eat those. But we would not have eaten a high carbohydrate diet year round. It's just impossible for any of our ancestors, short of just some very small areas, you know, in the tropical zones, where people would have eaten primarily carbohydrate diets. They just wouldn't have. Anyone from Northern Europe, anyone, pretty much, if you're from Northern Europe or Europe at all, your ancestors probably did eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. That's just part of it. Now, you can look at the current chronic diseases: obesity, heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, cancer, neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and the health problems are associated with our food. There's something seriously wrong. In our modern world, most people have insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome. And it's so epidemic that it's just weird to me that this has become politicized, that, you know, we have the food companies telling our government what to tell us what to eat. It's kind of crazy. It's not animal products and saturated fat that are making us sick. As much as those food companies want the government to tell us that it is, it's just not true. It's the fast food. It's the processed foods. It's the high refined carbs and sugar. We're eating too much sugar. We're eating too many refined carbs. We're not eating whole food. So if the government was in our favor doing the things it was supposed to do, they would be focused on food quality. They would not be telling us to eat cereal and grains and refined carbs. They would be telling us to eat meat, fruits, and vegetables, whole foods. Now, I've interviewed experts across all spectrums of nutrition. I've had vegans on, I've had carnivores on, paleo, keto, everywhere in between. The interesting thing is every single one of them will tell you that their way of eating is the best because it is based on high quality whole food. And they'll be able to pull out the studies that show people eating their diet, whole foods, are crushing it. They're doing great. But what's hard is that they ignore whole food studies that say the exact same thing about a different type of diet because it doesn't fit their worldview. It doesn't fit their paradigm. So they have a cognitive bias. So, you know, I just really struggle when someone tells me that the quality of your vegetable matters, but the quality of your meat doesn't. It's just all meat is bad. Or, and I've got people say the same thing, you know, the other way, is the quality of the meat matters, but all vegetables are bad. You know, that doesn't make sense to me. Our bodies were designed to eat both. Quality is what matters. So, you know, that's why the paleo diet makes sense to me. I think everybody should be trying to eat more whole food. You know, the debate's out about whether we would have eaten potatoes or, you know, and I don't think we would have eaten much dairy, to be honest with you, because we didn't have cows. You know, we didn't have goats. We hunted them or something similar to them, but we didn't have animal product like that. We weren't domesticating the animals, so we weren't doing dairy. Beans, you know, those are a little weird because, there are some issues there where we have to be careful with them. But, you know, I like the primal experience of having a big, juicy steak. I just do. I love having a cup of blueberries or blackberries and the sweetness and the tartness and just, I love that, okay? So I'm not going to give up either one of them. I'm just not. My diet is comprised of meat, fish, vegetables, and some fruit. I did try the carnivore diet for a few weeks, and I started missing vegetables. I tried the vegetarian diet, and then I adapted it into the pescatarian diet to try to get my protein, and I couldn't do it. I gained weight because I was eating too many fruits and vegetables and grains, and so I just started putting on weight. So there's not something that I enjoy. And, you know, when I did these little experiments, you know, I was typically doing them during my my feasting season. So, you know, it was not a period of time when I had to worry about being in ketosis. I just did what I did. So, you know, I think it's important for you to understand that whole food is the answer. However you choose to put that in a way of eating is really about you. But I will say this, if you're going to try seasonal ketosis, you do need to think about a few things, okay? One, I don't have any insulin resistance or diabetes or, you know, I don't have any of the diseases or any of the issues that people would be suffering from that they might be using this as a protocol. So if you have insulin resistance or diabetes, you know, or if you're using the ketogenic diet for cancer, Alzheimer's disease, PCOS, or an autoimmune issue, I wouldn't necessarily cycle off of the ketogenic diet. You know, those protocols are specific about staying in keto the whole time. And so that's not something where you would want to cycle out because you're just setting yourself up. If you're way above a healthy body composition and you want to use keto to lose weight, seasonal ketosis is also probably not something for you because your weight is going to fluctuate. I fluctuate 10 to 15 pounds each year as I go through these cycles. So that is, and then of course, if you're prone to eating disorders, you know, you need to find a way of eating that you're comfortable with and that's sustainable for you. The cycling in and out is probably not in your best interest. You know, except for this slip up I had recently due to COVID-19, I've been able to manage my seasons stably for the last 8 years. You know, going into my feasting season in late August, early September, and then coming out of it right after the Super Bowl or my birthday in at the first week of February. That's my feasting season, and then my fasting season or famine season, as I call it, will run the rest of the year. And as I said, I might put on 10 to 15 pounds during the feasting season, but I ditch that weight pretty quickly and spend my famine season at my lower range of my set point. Now, I love the metabolic flexibility that I have to be able to spend part of the time in ketosis and part of the time having a little bit more carbs. You know, when I say more carbs, I'm talking about beer and some simple carbs. You know, it's like I'll have a hot dog, I'll have a hamburger. Someone offers me a piece of pie at a tailgate, I'll eat it. So that's kind of that thing. You know, to me, the weight loss is relatively easy. Once I'm in ketosis, my body just naturally says, okay, you don't need this. And some of what I'm flushing out from a weight perspective is water, but a lot of it is body fat, and it goes pretty quickly, and I'm pretty happy with that. Now, if you're interested in diving deeper into this topic, there's two ways that you can do this. I talked about the group earlier, you know, 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group, or you can go to the website, 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/455. And there's a comment section under this post. So I put a post with the transcripts each week. And that's why I tell you the full show notes are there. If you go there, there's a comment section. You can leave a comment there. You know, I'm pretty passionate about the benefits that I get and the flexibility I get and the freedom I get with seasonal ketosis and my style of ancestral living. So I love talking about it. If you want to go into more detail with this, I encourage you to go check out one of those two places and let's continue the conversation there. All right, Raz, welcome back.
This is great. A lot of good stuff in the episode.
Yeah, you know, most people that will talk about ketosis, they talk about it in terms of it being a permanent lifestyle, and it can be. But I think it's kind of easy for people to get roped into measurements or things, and you know, not necessarily doing it for the right reason. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that I was going to roll up on football season and want to go tailgating. You know, since I finished my Tough Mudder, I was like having a beer. Mm-hmm. And I was out of ketosis that afternoon, that evening. So, you know, just from my lifestyle perspective, it just didn't make sense. There were going to be periods of time that I was not. But I found a manageable way that I could spend some of the year in ketosis and get the benefits that I wanted to get. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, spend some time doing some things that I enjoy.
That sounds great. I'm glad that you found this new way to work keto into your normal lifestyle. That sounds like it's flexible enough to work with the way that you like to live.
It does. It does. You know, of course, you know, this year I had a little bit of difficulty getting out of the feasting mode just with everything that was going on. So I did put on a good bit more weight than I normally would have, but I've dropped almost all of that now, and I'm back down to near a low for the last 5 years. I've been running at about 207 pounds, and I'm right about mm-hmm. there right now. I think I'm going to push it down a little lower because my muscle mass is a little lower than it was 5 years ago. So mm-hmm. I'm probably going to push my weight down below 200 before I kind of level things out again. But yeah, so I do see some fluctuations with my weight. And I know that can be challenging for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I wanted to ask you about that. As you watch the scale go up and down, how does that impact mostly how you feel? Because to me, a few extra pounds can feel kind of yucky and sluggish for me. But for you, how does that feel when you're in the feasting mode versus the famine mode?
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, okay. Well, first off, I'm about 5'11". Mm-hmm. So I think I can carry 200 pounds pretty well. And I can carry up to 215, I would say, okay. Mm-hmm. I don't actually worry about the scale as much. I mean, occasionally I'll step on it during my feasting mode just to kind of see where I am. I can usually just guess it by looking at how my pants fit. Before we moved down here to Panama, I found a pair of cargo shorts that I liked. So I bought like four or five different pair in different colors of the mm-hmm. same cargo shorts. And so they all fit me the same way. And so mm-hmm. I can just pretty much tell when I put those cargo shorts on how I'm doing, you know, where I mm-hmm. am. And as I mentioned, I eat relatively low carb during my feasting season. So I'm not crazy on the carbs. It's just, I don't really worry about it. If I'm out with folks and we want to have some beers, I don't even think about it. You know, if someone offers me something that I wouldn't normally eat, like a hamburger with a bun, I'm going to eat mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to worry too much about it. But I do pay attention to my size. You know, if I start noticing that I'm getting bigger, mm-hmm. then I'll tap it down a little bit. I won't mm-hmm. go as crazy. Well, except again during COVID, but
yes, again,
this was an unusual,
totally different rules for COVID.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're someone that's really stuck on the scale and you just know there's this weight, this magical weight you're supposed to weigh, your head tells you, this is my number. Mm-hmm. You're not going to like this. You know, the interesting thing is like I said, I'll put on 10, 15 pounds in a swing. So, mm-hmm. you know, from my feasting to that, I will put on up to 15 pounds. But you have to recognize that about 5 or 7 of that is water weight. Mm-hmm. And I flush that the first week I go back into ketosis.
Right, right.
You know, so I'll literally sit there and say, okay, I'm going to go into ketosis. And, you know, I drop 5 to 7 pounds in a mm-hmm. week or two. And then it tapers down and I'll lose, you know, a few pounds a week and then 1 pound a week. And then mm-hmm. my body will get to that homeostasis. It's happy weight. Yeah. And I just go by how I feel. Now, I've mentioned this before on another episode. I was talking about this a little bit. I don't feel as good during the feasting season, mm-hmm. you know, because the foods I'm eating are not as healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, the beer is not a health food.
That's true. Sadly, yeah, true.
As much as they'll try to tell you, it's okay, you can have a couple, it's actually really good. No, it's not actually really good for you at all. That's fake science. Someone mm-hmm. wanted that to be true. They made the hypothesis and then they just said, well, it doesn't kill you, so it's got to be good for you.
Yeah. great science.
You know, yeah. So, you know, don't, if you're someone who's going to freak out about the scale, if you're someone who has issues with your eating, this is not that kind of thing. You know, find one way that works and stick with that would be my recommendation for that. If you're really worried about the scale, stay in ketosis.
That's a good point.
But I also want to preface it. You know, I noticed that I do feel better in ketosis. It's just a better state for me to be in, but I'm not all that tied into being that way all the time. You know, I'm okay to have a couple bad, you know, days where I just, my energy level is not as high, or, you know, I feel a little frumpy. I'm cool with that. It's the price I pay for the detour I took. And I just accept that. You know, but if you're someone who's doing it as a protocol for cancer, for diabetes, insulin resistance, any other metabolic issue, then it's something you're probably going to want to stay on. It's not something you're going to want to cycle through.
That's a good point.
You know, and even the people that do cyclical, where they're, you know, taking one day off per week, I said that would actually drive me bonkers, because I would feel like I was making all this progress, dropping, like I said, 7 pounds in a week, only to pick 4 of them back up.
Yeah,
and I would be like, that's, you know, all I'm doing is flushing water. I'm not really losing any weight, and
yeah.
So I would struggle with that kind of cycle. Whereas if I'm off, I'm off. If I'm on, I'm on. And that's another thing about my personality, you know. And I talk about in the Wellness GPS, you've got to know yourself. You got to be self-aware. And it's, you know, one of the things I know is I don't have a dimmer switch. I'm a light switch, baby. I'm on or I'm off. And so it's just easier for me to say, okay, flip the switch. And I just do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that the cyclical, you know, one day a week where you can have a cheat day or a cheat meal or whatever, it's a slippery slope, because food can be a trigger. And if you have that one serving of chips, it might become the bag of chips. And then it might be one more serving the next day and the next day. And it is a slippery slope. And if you're not confident in your ability to put it away and get back to it, then that can be dangerous.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I would like to mention is that, you know, we're starting to get anecdotal evidence and maybe some studies where we're looking at performance of someone who's in complete ketosis versus someone who uses carbs as a fuel along with ketones versus someone who's just a sugar burner. And, you know, I'm not going to say one fueling mechanism is best for everybody, but I would put this out there for anyone that is trying to do endurance sport. The heavier you are, the more weight you have to carry for the miles that you're traveling, the more wear and tear you have on your body. And if you're eating refined carbs specifically and sugar, you're going to have inflammation, and that inflammation is going to cause problems in your joints. And so from a health perspective, I would be the one that would err on the side of using ketones for energy if I were doing endurance athletics. An occasional carb up here and there before a race might help your performance. But, you know, I'm not sure how much additional glycogen your body's going to be able to carry for, you know, that particular event. And you're always going to want to practice what you're going to race. So you would be eating carbs as a regular probably thing each week to carb up for your long runs if you're following a standard training protocol. So, you know, you would still be eating a good bit of carbs as a part of that. So I'm not saying one is better than the other from a performance perspective. I'm just thinking in terms of wear and tear on your body, inflammation, and you just, you know, you just weigh a little bit less, you know, you're carrying less water. So, you know, all of that's going to probably in the end help your performance, but they don't have enough evidence right now where I would say there's one superior fueling way.
Yeah. And I think as an endurance athlete, that's what kind of attracted me to keto in the first place, was I needed to lose a few extra pounds that I was carrying around. Every time we've moved, and we've moved several times as a family, we set up the house, we have projects, I can't get in the runs, I gain a few pounds. And so I looked to keto for just something different, a way to just get those pounds off. And it actually worked. For me, the one or two times that I've actually ate something non-keto, it impacted me greatly. I was very sick. So I can't really do too much cheating. I know I've got a limit. I probably can eat something that's bread or sugar, but not very much, more than a bite of cake or something small, because it will impact me. But as far as the endurance part of it, it has helped a lot in my running. I'm not winning races or anything. I've never been fast either in the first place. But yeah, keto has been a real big help for me in the endurance field. But like you mentioned earlier and just a little while ago, is that you really need to find what works for you as an individual. And there's just a wide range of eating. I could give you a couple of names of some impressive vegan ultra runners. Scott Jurek is probably one of the most famous vegan ultra runners. And then to the exact opposite, Michael McKnight just this summer or spring actually ran 100 miles on no calories, nothing, no food, 100 miles. I want to say he did it in 18 hours, if I remember right, but so he's definitely keto, but like you were mentioning, he is also carbing up a little bit in the week leading up. So his body was fueled with carbs, but then he goes straight keto so that his body's prepared with fat as well. And I think that's probably how he survived it, but he's also a pretty famous keto ultra athlete.
Yeah. As over the years I found I can get into keto pretty easy. I don't really do the keto flu thing anymore. Since I go in and out, you know, each year, I don't really have a keto flu. I feel a little less energetic for a day or two, but the switch over for me is pretty quick. So that's one of the things I like about, you know, doing it the way I do it. But that said, not everybody would have, you might not have the same experience that I had. So, you know, what's that they say in the ad is the results you see might not be your results, or
right.
I guarantee it. So I'm not going to say everybody would have as easy of a time going back and forth. I don't have any insulin resistance. I don't have any blood sugar issues. You know, my A1C has always been fine. So for me to switch back and forth seems relatively easy. You know, but like I said, most of the year I'm eating this way anyway. The difference is just not paying attention to my carbs or not being worried about the carbs. And so that's why it works. And the other side of it is I don't stress about whether I'm at 0.5 or 0.25, as far as what my ketone levels are. As long as I'm in ketosis, I'm cool. But a lot of people are like, no, I want to see that number. I want to be 1.5 or better. I bought a Keto Mojo not long ago, to replace my other ketone meter, that I lost, I guess. I can't find it after I moved. I'll probably find it when I go get the rest of my stuff. But anyway, so I bought it, and they introduced this new, where they measure your glucose and you measure your ketones at the same time. And when you do that, it gives you a different measure relative. So ketones relative to glucose. And so it's an index that they've created. And so again, it's just one of those, it's that competitiveness of seeing a higher number that it seems to be pushing toward. And I'm not a big fan of that. If you're either in ketosis or you're not, you know, you can say you're more in ketosis. All it means is there's just more ketones circulating in your blood. So I don't think you're in more ketosis. You're just, you know, can't be more perfect. You're there.
Right.
You did it.
Right.
More pregnant, I guess.
Yes, right.
You are. The days you might feel more pregnant than you did the day before, but you know, you're not in more ketosis. You're in ketosis. Right. You're not. And so for me, it's a good protocol, but I'm a little bit different in that I don't have a health issue. I do it to thin out, to lean out a bit. Because if I did the feasting all year round, if I ate that way out of control, I would blow up, you know? So I know I can't do that, and I have to be very cognizant of it. I wasn't this year. I went and I stayed with it, and it just kind of proved my point of once I broke that, that barrier that I had, my set point for my body, it said, oh, good. We'll just throw on a lot more weight. We don't have a problem with that. You gave us the fat cells years ago. We know how to use them. Just keep feeding us. And it did. So, you know, you gotta turn that around. And for me, it's, like I said, no dimmer switch, just flip the switch and let's go.
That's awesome. You must be very metabolically flexible then to be able to go on and off and in and out of ketosis, and your body doesn't give you the pain that a lot of people get with the keto flu.
It doesn't. No, you know, but I'm, like I said, I think I'm very fortunate. I know a lot of people are not like that. They struggle to get into ketosis. And once they're there, they're like, I love this. I'm never going back. And, you know, that's cool. But you know, you eat something bad, like you said, you don't, maybe you don't even know it has sugar in it, or as many carbs in it as it does, and you eat it and you fall out of ketosis. Now, people do that all the time and go right back into ketosis and never even know they were out of ketosis. So, you know, it's not this magical state where you're going to have to go through keto flu every time you go in and out, because people are going in and at some levels, most people are in a mild state of ketosis almost every morning they wake up, because you've gone, you know, 8 or 12 hours without eating. So your body is starting to produce ketones. Now, is it using them efficiently as a fuel? No, because you're immediately going to put some more glucose in the system. You know, if you're very active, like you do your endurance sport, then you're burning down some glycogen in your muscles and your liver. So when you do have additional carbs, your body's going to use this insulin to restore that. So if you need it in the liver, if you need it in the muscles, then insulin's going to do its thing to do that. If you didn't do any work and you're already topped up with glycogen, then it's only got one other choice, and it's going to start making fat. So if that's something you're trying to avoid, you want a better body composition, I can't think of a better way to do it than keto.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's what I've experienced as well.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up, and I'll see you next week, Raz.
All right. Have a good week.
You too.
Thanks.
Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Amanda Thebe and discuss her book, Menopocalypse, How I Learned to Thrive During Menopause and How You Can Too. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.